Welcome to a Listen to Older Voices Golden Moments program.
I'm brought to you through the Toorak Times.
This is a repeat program from our archives that we believe has merit enough to rebroadcast so that the story and the person's life can be shared with those who may have missed it the first time.
Hello, I'm Rob Greaves, and you're about to listen to the second and final part of my talk with 82-year-old Clem Gracie. In part one, Clem spoke of his early life in Adelaide and the encouragement he received from his mother in regard to his playing of the piano and the organ. Clem was successful in gaining a position at Allens in Adelaide, where he worked until the outbreak of the Second World War, where his life and service in the AIF took a temporary downturn. This week, Clem talks about meeting his wife Margaret, literally over a cup of coffee, and continues his ongoing story of his music, some of which is featured during the program. However, we pick up today with Clem taking us back to his AIF days, days of misery working in a labour squad, before he gets rescued by the Salvation Army.
One night I saw an officer approaching me. He had an officer's uniform on, but he was a Red Shield man. He belonged to the Salvation Army. Red Shield man. And he had this officer's uniform, and he said to me, because I knew him, and if you know someone in those sort of places, you get somewhere. Yeah, what the hell are you doing here, Clem? That's what I want to know. He said, don't worry, boy, I'll have you out of this tomorrow. This is right near next to Adelaide, a place called Warradale. I'm leaving, I'm in charge of the Red Shield hut here, but I want to go to another hut, and you can take over from me in this hut. And he said, I'll make sure it happens by tomorrow, if we possibly can. He said, I've only got to get one other person's permission, and that's the camp commandant. Now, so he went to the camp commandant, and as soon as the camp commandant said, heard that my name was Clem Gracie, he said, oh, Clem. It appears that he had a son who sat next to me at school, and we cheated off each other. So that's all right. Tell Clem that's quite all right. And tell Clem he can eat in the sergeant's mess. And I was only a private. I had a few stops on my own the next day. And they let me eat in the sergeant's mess. So I was waited on. Furthermore, that lasted for 3 years. They forgot about me. And I wasn't going to remind them. Oh, by the way, when I was A1, there was no reason for me, not to be sent anywhere.
What did this job involve?
Oh, in the end of the Red Shield hut. Oh, yes. I was told this before I started. Clem, you've got to make sure there's writing paper there and pens whatnot ready for the boys to write home. You've got to play for all the religious meetings. They had at least one religious meeting each week. And there was quite a reasonably good piano there.
That was a punishment.
right, Miley. And after the meetings, you just go into the next room and you serve out coffee and biscuits to the troops.
That's sort of a welfare position, isn't it?
Oh, yes, it is. It was, see, knowing someone. And then, of course, at the end of the war, I was anxious to get out. Mm. As I said, I'm not patriotic. And the next hurdle was to get out of there. Now, it was the married blokes who got out first because they were too expensive. They had to keep their wives as well, you see. So, but I could see I was going to be ages getting out because of the fact that I was single. But then again, a friend can help you. I thought, well, I want my job back at Allens. So I just got in touch with the general manager again, the same man who hired me. And I said, look, I'd like to come back. Oh, and he was anxious to have me back, yeah, so I couldn't have been too bad, even though I'm not a salesman. Anyway, do you know, it was probably within a couple of days after I wrote to him that I got my honourable discharge. He had a friend working in the Keswick Barracks. And you see, he had a friend, and between the three of us, I was out next day, within a couple of days.
It's really true, isn't it? It's who you know, not what you know.
Yes. It's like that everywhere, and I found it again and again and again. But they were typical times that I knew the right person.
Yes.
Oh, dear.
So you discharged and you went back to Allens?
Oh, yes. Straight back into the music department. And I think if I had stuck it out, I would have done very well at Allens.
Why didn't you?
Oh, well, you know, young and silly. What was I about? I was about 22 by that time, and I was still young and silly. Swollen-headed, of course, because in the army we were only really a number. and we weren't allowed to go out in civilian clothes. We had to wear a uniform, and I couldn't get rid of that uniform quickly enough. I think I burnt it or put it in the rubbish bin the day after I came out. Anything khaki had had it. Well, I believe it's much different now. I believe everybody sleeps on a bed now. Then it was what they call a palliasse. That's straw stuck inside some hessian. That's what it was like. And also, meal times, you had a tin can and a tin plate. Once I went to the sergeant's mess, I threw them away, and I had stewards waiting on me. I've had an easy life, really, apart from those few months in that Labour battalion.
Yeah, but you say you had an easy life. You didn't really have an easy childhood.
Oh, no.
Little bit of reward later on for what you had to do.
Yeah. Well, the music earned my next meal for all those years. I had a starving wife and three starving kids.
Hang on, let's back up here. Starving wife. First of all, what was her name?
Oh, Margaret.
But how did you meet Margaret?
I was in Sydney for a while, and as soon as I got there, the war stopped. The war finished in 45. But, well, I got out in about the end of that year.
Right.
It must have been about Christmas time, I suppose. And Marg was still in Sydney, and I was in Adelaide. And we were engaged for nearly 3 years.
But how did you actually meet?
I know. Over the road from Wynyard Station, opposite, there was a place where soldiers, airmen and whatnot, and anyone who's an ex-soldier could go and have a free cup of coffee.
Okay.
And there's a bloke at the front this night. Come inside, you know, if you're in the army or been in the army, and free cup of coffee. Anything is free, it attracts everyone, as you know. So up I went, and there was volunteers. There was a religious outfit, and Marg was one of the girls voluntarily working there, serving out the coffee. And we had to go up and get our coffee from the girls. They all looked pretty good after being in the army for too long. And then we took our coffee and sat down. And then we were told collectively that if you want another cup of coffee, well, just go up and ask one of the girls and they'll fill it up for you. Bottomless coffee. And I finished my coffee, and I'd noticed I was going to go up and get another one, but I was saved that because one of the girls came out. And I was sitting amongst all the other people in higher ranks and generals and admirals and all that, all hanging around, and she went straight for me. I thought, God, that's rather surprising, but this was Mark. And she said, excuse me, would you like another cup of coffee? And I started to shiver and shake a bit. I said, yes. So she wouldn't have gotten, I think she might have got me another one, I can't remember that.
Listen to older voices. The magic of memories.
She was an adherent of the Methodist Church in Manly. She lived in Manly. And next Sunday I was at the Manly Methodist Church, and I made sure I'd made myself known to her again. And it went on from there.
So interesting that she was from Methodist, same as Mum.
Same as Mum, yeah.
Did you make that connection at that time?
No. Oh, no, it was just circumstance.
Mm.
But we lived. She lived in Sydney and I lived in Adelaide for nearly 3 years.
That's a hard way to have a courtship.
Yeah. And, of course, in those days, the only leave we ever had was a fortnight per year.
Gosh.
And she had a fortnight, and I had a fortnight, and we travelled over to, I travelled to Sydney, she to Adelaide.
Cool.
For that fortnight. And it was one of those visits over to Adelaide, it was her first visit over to Adelaide after that, that I proposed to her then. And we were married in Manly Methodist Church, of course. All the right words, all the right expenses and everything else, and lived happily until...
Her mum and dad were happy with you?
Oh, her dad, he died before the marriage.
Oh, okay. After he met you or before?
Oh, yes, I met him.
You met him?
Yeah,
right.
Very sick man.
Oh, that must have been sad for her.
Yeah, it was.
At the same time as...
But Mark had a marvellous mother. Marvellous mother-in-law. She was good. Oh, yes, I loved her as much as I loved Mark. She was good.
So you set up home in Adelaide?
Oh, yes. Oh, it was understood. You go where the husband goes.
Yes.
And I was already settled in Adelaide.
Yes.
So Marg had to come over after the wedding. We only had a week of a week of holiday, or what do you call them, honeymoon, in the Blue Mountains.
Right.
And then by plane back to Adelaide. Hey, the plane in those years took 3 hours. 3 hours to get from Sydney to Adelaide.
Goodness
and
me.
Vice versa. They hopped down somewhere at Mildura or somewhere else. And this is how the world has changed. I don't know. It would take about 3/4 of an hour now, I suppose. I don't know. But no, it was 3 hours then.
And probably quite an adventure in those days.
Oh, yes. Yes. Mark worked as a stenographer for the manager of the MLC, I think it was, MLC Insurance Company. And the whole office was all agog to think that Marg would, little old Marg, would take a plane ride all the way to LA just to see her boyfriend. You see, so, yes, it was. The whole world's changed. Like, in my lifetime, no one could imagine.
I'd like to come back to towards the end of the interview, these changes that you might have seen. But just for now, let's just stay with you and Marg. She's come over to LA, you're living together, you obviously had children.
Yeah.
And that must have been a joyous time for you.
Yes, I like them when they're 30, of course. They're very nice kids, but they're easier to manage at 30. I never had to change a nappy, and there were 3 kids.
Wow, you grew up
no,
that easy.
I had an easy life. Even when Marg was in hospital, my mother helped out. And Marg, she was marvellous to serving up in the kitchen. She served up everything. If the salt was missing, I'd just happen to say, "Where's the salt?" And I wouldn't have to get it. She'd get up and get it. It was like that all the time. Oh, you wouldn't know this, I don't think. Really, accommodation was almost impossible for many years after the war.
Because of the lack of materials for building houses?
Yes, and there was nothing built during the war.
No, of course not.
Everything went towards the war.
The war effort.
And so for the only accommodation we could get for a while was 2 rooms. One is a sort of sitting room and one's a bedroom, and then we had to share a kitchen.
Wow.
And the sharing of a kitchen with another woman is not pleasant. By devious means and cunning, we managed to rent a 6-roomed house.
Wow.
And that's another story, and we haven't got time for now. But yes, we were there for about a couple of years. We had to give it up in the end.
But that must have been a relief to get out of that 2-room kitchen into your own home.
Yeah. But still, it's quite common. Everyone was having the same trouble.
Yes.
And the fact that this recruiting man in the army said we'd have no troubles after the war, you know. Yeah. It all did not come to pass.
Yeah, right. So were you still working at Allen's when you were married?
Yes. And Allen's, they threw a party for us and they were very good, and they presented us with a lovely dinner set. Oh, yes. And that manager was the one that did all this.
But did you still harbour this desire to...
Yes, I always had that in the back of my mind.
Did that ever come to fruition?
Oh, yeah. I only lasted for 10 years, or 12, I don't know, 12, 13 years at Allen's.
And then you left for yourself, did you?
Then left to work. Well, I had my qualifications by that time.
How did you get those?
What, the qualifications?
Yes, your musical qualifications.
Oh, I worked like bloody hell.
What did that involve?
Well, I've got 3 diplomas for music. Right. One is a very common one in Australia called AMSA. That's Australian Music Examinations Board, which is a combination of all the universities. That was for piano playing, I think. It might have been piano teaching. No, I think it was piano playing. Oh, I don't know, I can't remember. You think I'd know, wouldn't you? It's over there, I can't, but I never look at it.
No, of course you don't.
Another one, of course, my mummy told me I had to play the organ, and I kept playing the organ, and I got a diploma, a licentiate diploma, from the Trinity College in England, as an organ performer.
Did they hold their examinations over here, did they?
They sent an examiner out, a bloke called Dr. Ford, marvellous organist. Yeah, and he examined me, and I passed first pop. All my exams, even at school, passed them all. Many of now the AMSA, I don't know about now, I can't speak for now, but all those diploma exams, there were no marks, you just pass or fail.
Right.
When you get that postage letter to saying what happened, you don't look at anything except down the bottom for that pass or fail mark, and that's what I look for first. The other one I got while I was in the army, now it's called AMUS TCL. It was an exam a head exam, and you only had to write papers on different subjects. That's mentioned there too. Harmony, counterpoint, they're the main subjects. Music history, form, and orchestration. The examination lasted 2 days, because you had to write about all that. And much of it I've forgotten since, of course.
So what business did you set up?
Oh, teaching, private music teaching. That was the main thing. I worked at the MLC for about 2 years, teaching piano. But I didn't like that very much. There was no such thing as a union for music teachers then. And the pay was rather poor, but the hours were good. You see, when I taught privately, I started at 7 o'clock in the morning and finished at 10 o'clock at night. But during the day, people were either at work or at school. Very, very little I could do.
Yes. And did that provide you everything you had wanted in terms, not so much in terms of money, but in terms of satisfaction?
Oh, satisfaction, yes, but money, no.
I'm yet to meet a musician.
Yeah, I know. They're all poor.
That's right, make money out of my music.
Yeah. Well, I think I did very well, because I said I had three kids and a starving wife and a cat and a canary and a dog, and they all had to be fed.
Yes.
So I couldn't have been too bad. You can't earn your living very much by playing Mozart sonatas. Now, in my time, I learned every one of the Mozart sonatas. Hardly much of Beethoven at all, because I didn't like him compared with Mozart. And people won't pay you to play that sort of music. So I went for the popular songs. I had to play them at Allen's anyway. I knew all the pop songs. And what I play now for the Odd Codgers now were learnt right back in those years.
But that's what they grew up with.
That's what they grew up. I'm old and they're old, so they think I'm like him up there. You see? So anyway, it was a good stamping ground at Allen's. I've got a lot to thank Allen's for, because I got to know the right sort of people. I got to know the music literature, which you couldn't learn all that unless you were selling it and into the business. And I was teaching mostly piano, and whilst I was playing for churches, I still had to teach the organ. And I had about four, five, perhaps even six people gain some sort of diploma amongst my pupils in those years.
Oh, goodness.
So they weren't thoroughly wasted. Mm. The average person, if you want to know what an average pupil's like, they do quite well until about an intermediate grade. It starts to get hard then.
Yes.
And that's when a lot of them drop off. By the time, these days, there are 8 grades at the AMEB. You do 8 grades and then the diploma. In my day, the grades were the other way around. They started off in grade 7 and went up to grade 1. How things have all changed?
Yes.
Nothing's the same.
Now, most people, when they take a profession on, at some stage, you know, when they get in their late 50s or even early 60s, they then retire. Did this happen to you, or
No, I didn't want to retire. But I will tell you that in my early, between 40 and 45, I thought, gee, I'm not making much money. And I'm working like bloody hell. Mm. And I should be better off. You know, I always had my own home, but I never had a new car, never ever. All my cars I paid for about $500 for. And anyway, the money was getting at me. I thought I should be better. I could see people around me, you know, with brand new cars and brand new this, that and the other. And I thought, I don't want to give up music teaching, because that was my life. And I vowed that I would continue to do that. But I decided to moonlight. Well, I didn't want to get out of the music field, so I bought and sold pianos.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and I actually did, in fact, for quite a long while, have a piano shop.
Thank you.
listen to older voices. Living History on Ageless Radio.
I got to know quite a lot about, I had to have friends to help me, and I had piano tuning friends.
Of course.
And they were very valuable. One bloke who used to be a piano tuner at Allen's, he had left, and I used him up a bit. He was working under his own steam, like I was working under my own steam, and he taught me quite a lot. Robbie, oh, poor old Robbie, he was a nice boy and all that, but he was a quid man. Yeah, he was all right, but I used to often say to Robbie, look, because I had to repair some of these pianos, and eventually started tuning them too. But and tuning is a special art, nothing to do with my qualifications.
No.
I did learn a lot from Robbie, mainly because it suited him for different reasons. Sometimes I'd say to him, look, I can't seem to do this, Robbie. You know, something wrong with the action. How do I fix that? And he'd say, oh, don't worry, Clem, I'll do it, you know. And he'd do it, and I'd watch him. And I learnt a lot that way.
Yes.
When it came to tuning, I got some textbooks, but textbooks for tuning are not much good at all. I did rough tuning. And when I got much better, or a bit better, I was never perfect. I'd never be this world's best tuner, put it that way. But I was a bit of a, God, this time I think some of Robbie rubbed off on me. I thought, well, I may not be the best tuner, but I'll still tune. Well,
so I was a quid.
A quid. And I was never the world's best salesman, but that's what I did.
You keep saying that, but you still managed to sell things.
Oh, yes. In the case of pianos, I sold them because I was one up on all the other piano salesmen because I played the piano quite well. Yeah, the other people, they were better at the talking bit. I can remember, this happened twice in my piano selling career. I'd play for very often a man and a wife.
Right.
And I remember one woman said, after I finished playing, she said, oh, well, that's lovely. Do you go with the piano, you see? and I looked at the husband then, and he had a scowl on his face. Ooh. So I thought, oh, my God.
You're in trouble now.
Yeah. So I've forgotten what happened after that. Yeah. But I remember selling the piano, but I didn't go with the piano.
No.
But that's what she said. And that happened again, a very similar occasion. So, everything had to come to an end.
You mentioned a couple of times that you had huge changes during your lifetime.
Yeah.
If I was to say to you, well, what have been the most dominant or the change that's had the most effect you over all your years, what would you say? What's something that's been...
Well, I can tell you something that's changed life itself for all of us. I never knew I never heard of the word computer. Nor did anyone else, I don't think.
No.
And the first computers I saw were pictures, and they took up the whole of this room. Now they put them on their lap.
You thought of having one of those in your house, but you didn't even think of it.
No, you never thought of it. Right, about the same time I heard about computers, I heard about the silicone chip. Well, do you know what a silicone chip is?
I do, actually.
Yes, you probably do, but I don't. But I wanted to know what it was about. So I read a couple of articles about it and how they were made and all that sort of thing. And I read them thoroughly. And I was no wiser after reading. Well, it is bloody, bloody wonderful.
It's bloody, that's simply it. It's bloody wonderful.
Yeah. Oh, you're talking, look, people think I'm marvellous because I can do this and play the piano because my fingers. I've had people say to me, oh, I give my, silly remarks. I can think that a couple of people said this, I'd give my right arm to be able to play like that. What a stupid remark.
Right.
I'm pretty sure they're quite serious about it also.
One day we all have to pass on because it's part of life.
Yes, you've got no choice there.
That's right, got no choice.
Yeah.
And by the look of you, you're looking very fit. You've got many years to go, and I hope that's the way it is.
Oh, thank you.
But when that day does eventually come, how would you like to be remembered?
My keyboard playing, I suppose. I can't think of anything else. That was the main part of me.
Your music or your keyboard playing?
Keyboard playing and music. Oh, well, I had all those music subjects. They're all the same to me. They're all music, and piano playing is music.
So you want to be remembered for your piano and your music?
Yes, I suppose so. Yeah, well, I've got nothing else to boast about. I can't boast about my military career.
Well, Clem, first of all, thank you very much for inviting me into your life, not just your home. It's been a real pleasure.
Listen to Older Voices is produced by Rob Greaves at the Melbourne Community Support Program. Listen to Older Voices is supported by financial assistance from the Commonwealth Government through the Commonwealth Home Support Program and is podcast to you through the Toorak Times and TAG.